down and troubled, and you need some love and care, and nothing is going right.
So, have you ever felt that nothing is going right? Well, cheer up. From Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I am Dave, the caregiver's caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous worldwide Block Talk Radio Network. Yes, folks, I'm the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we're going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. Ouch, it even sounds nasty, doesn't it? Well, we have an exciting show planned for you today. Richard Berrier, bereaved husband who lost his beloved wife, Martha, to cancer while she was still battling dementia. Richard is the founder of his own software company that developed a brand new app to discourage texting and driving. Text me later. That's what it's called. So stay tuned. You do not want to miss this show. I'm your host today, Dave Nassani, and this show is to caregivers of every kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring, selfless, sacrificial, and are very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. Folks, learn a lesson from the airlines. Remember every time you board a plane, you kind of tune them out when they begin to tell you that if there's an emergency and your oxygen mask pops out of the ceiling and there's a loss of cabin pressure, and if you're with a child, to put your mask on first. Now, gosh, doesn't that sound like a very selfish thing to say? But actually, they know that you will most likely black out if you don't put your needs above theirs. And then, guess what? You won't be of any help to anybody. Caregivers are exactly the same way. Now, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects that it can have on us. It automatically throws us into this thing called the grief process. Ouch. Unfortunately, folks, there's only one way out of the grief process. And guess what? That's to go through the grief process. And hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss if you happen to feel like you are stuck. Now, if this is your first time tuning in, you can learn more about me and my show and my radio podcast and my books and my videos and my blog. It always sounds like it's like all about me here, but it's not. It's all about you. Just go to my website, davenass.com. That's Dave, and then the first four letters of my last name, N like Nancy, A like Apple, S like Sam, davenass.com. And the actual name of our show also works, Dave, the caregiver's caregiver.com. So go to my website and take my free quiz. Are you a candidate for burnout? And just for doing that, I'm going to send you a free copy of my ebook, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships, that is still getting rave reviews on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. So don't miss out on this very informative quiz that will assess where you are in the burnout process. And you get my free book just for doing that. Amazon is still charging 10 bucks almost for it, so it's a great value. All right, enough of that. I'm going to unmute my guest now, Richard Berrier. Welcome to the show, Richard. Thank you for patiently sitting through all of the introductions and stuff for our first-time listeners.
All right. Thanks, Dave. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, it's my honor. Thank you so much for agreeing to this interview. I know this is still a very emotional topic for you to discuss. You just lost your wife like 25 days ago. And I just want to give you permission to take as much time as you need to answer any questions or if you need a break or anything like that. No problem. The reason I'm asking you to relive these memories is to help, you know, those who are going through the experiences similar to what you and Martha went through. So you are in a position to help a lot of people today, Richard. Thank you so much. So please introduce yourself and tell us who you are.
Yeah, Dave, my name's Richard Berrier. I was with my wife for 30 years. We've been in Orange County and Santa Ana specifically in the same apartment complex. About a year and a half ago, we moved to a larger apartment downstairs. Like Dave was saying earlier, I started my own software company after getting laid off from a job, actually with the school system, which I thought, oh, I've got this locked down for the rest of my life. Well, 2008, 2009 happened. Got laid off, went back to school, got three business degrees, then I started my company.
Wow, you sound like an overachiever.
It came easier than I thought it would.
Well, good for you. So you and your wife were together for 30 years. Wow, that is a long time. How did you guys meet? I mean, was it love at first sight? Tell us a story.
Well, I'll tell you half the story, only because we, in the apartment complex, I just moved in, and I decided I was going to go to the jacuzzi late at night. Mm-hmm. There she was, and we just hit it right off the bat. The rest is literally history. I won't go into the second half of the story, but it's a good story.
Well, how nice. It's always nice to hear a romantic story. You know, my life is like that. My wife and I met, and it was like a fairy tale and a prince charming. And, you know, there I was on my white horse, and there she was. And we fell in love, and we've been together for just about 40 years.
Oh, wow.
And my little caveat is 20 years into it, she has the stroke and loses her speech and paralyzed on the right side. She, after a brief grieving period, she decided she's going to reinvent herself and do everything that she did before, basically with one arm and one leg tied behind her back. She's just an amazing, amazing woman. I know that I couldn't do what she's doing, and when I grew up, I want to be just like her. My wife's name is Charlene, wrote a book about her. That's the one I'm giving away. If you take that free quiz, one arm, one leg, 100 words, shameless plug. Okay. Tell me, Richard, what was your reaction when you first heard the news that your wife was diagnosed with dementia? Wow, she was young, right?
Well, I would tell you that I was 28 when I met her, and she was 43. I did not know that. She didn't look she didn't look like anybody that was in her 40s. She like
cougar.
Long, curly, straight. Yes, she was. She was the original cougar with like long, curly, strawberry blonde hair. Huh?
And she wore the leopard leotards, too, in the jacuzzi?
Actually, you know, yeah, really. Actually, no, she's never been into animal prints. No, think about it. Yeah, really.
No animals were killed during this presentation. Okay.
No. And I even fought once. But in any case, back when I was in my early 40s, I went back to school. I had done pottery when I was in high school and early college. I wanted to get back into it to get myself basically off the couch and to meet new people. Got really into it. So in the process of going back to school and doing all of that, Martha didn't have any interest in that. But that was also one way that when she was diagnosed with dementia, how I was able to deal with it because I could do my art as an outlet for myself. Me and a bunch of my friends, we were at Catalina Island. And there was a special pottery process we were doing. We were partying over there. So I call home, and Martha had gotten laid off probably a few months before I had left for Catalina. And she was sleeping later and later in the afternoon. Well, I just figured some of that's depression. But also dementia patients in the early stages start to go through depression as well because they're not understanding why they're forgetting all these things or what's going on.
Yeah,
I'm at Catalina Island. We were close to a phone booth, so I kept trying to call her. This is pre-cell phone. She wasn't answering the phone. It was getting later and later and later in the day. When I finally got in touch with her, I said, well, you know, what's going on? She goes, well, where are you? When are you coming home? What's going on? That's when I realized I have a problem. I don't know what this is because at the time, she was just way too young to get dementia as far as I knew. And
yeah,
I didn't even think about that. God, let me think about this. She was 64, 65, something like that. Yeah, it was very interesting. And so when I got her to the doctors, she must have asked within an hour, like 15, 16 times, where are we going? What's going on? I mean, and I give her the same answer. And, you know, I was sort of pretty much realizing, okay, I have a problem here. There's something radically going on. So when I got her to the doctor, you know, they, of course, diagnosed her with dementia. But there's several forms of dementia, Alzheimer's being just one form of dementia. And so she got tested, did the brain scans, the whole nine yards, and they came back and said, well, she doesn't have Alzheimer's, but she definitely has some form of dementia. We just don't know what that is. And here's some pills to take for that. The medications they give you, it's not a cure. It just sort of slows the process down. And so she quit asking the same question multiple times within an hour or even within a day. You can almost track the progress of it as she became more demented, for lack of a better term. She would start asking more of the same question over and over again. And so it's a way to slow it down. It's not a cure. There is no cures.
Well, the way you're describing this, Richard, it sounds like this came about very rapidly. I mean, I know with my mother, she came down with dementia. And, you know, as you look back after the diagnosis, you look back and you say, you know, it's like Reagan in the White House. You know, he's asking Nancy, how should I answer this or whatever, because he can't think of an answer really quickly. You can actually see that it was coming. But we kind of ignore the symptoms because the last thing in the world that we want to think that your mother or your wife is coming down with dementia. So did it really come that fast, or were there signs and symptoms that you kind of ignored?
You know what? I've never actually thought about that, Dave.
Well, that's why you're on the show.
That's right. But I will take, because I always thought it was depression. Because mm-hmm. She was an avid reader of the newspaper in the morning. And what's really sad about all this, she was an avid reader. As I look back, it's like, okay, she started to flip through the newspaper rather than read the paper. She quit reading all of these mystery books, which she absolutely loved. And just, again, I thought it was depression because she didn't want to go anywhere.
Yeah,
she didn't want to go for walks or anything.
Okay, so the symptoms were there.
Yes. But there again, you know, who thinks that somebody's going to come down with dementia?
Sure. With my mother, you know, it was just, oh, Mom, you know, she was always a little dingy. You know, she wasn't the sharpest tool in the shed, shall we say. I say that with love and respect. But, you know, my mother, if I had to compare her to someone, I can think of three people that she's very similar to. I mean, all her life. And we all know kind of dingy people. But my mother, and I say this in love, so I don't want to get any cards and letters. My mother was kind of like Edith Bunker, Rose from the Golden Girls, and Gracie Allen from Burns and Allen, George Burns.
Oh, wow.
And like, all rolled up into one. So naturally, when she started getting more and more forgetful and confused, we just said, oh, that's the way Mom's always been. But no, it started getting worse and worse and worse. And I guess when I realized that she couldn't tell time anymore, she didn't know how to read the clock, the big hand and the little hand, and she didn't know, you know, she didn't get this whole AM, PM thing. It's dark outside. Why isn't the sun up? I says, well, Mom, she's calling me at like 3 in the morning. And I says, it's nighttime. You know, you're supposed to be in bed, you know. So we started getting a clue, and that's when we started telling the doctor, because, you know, they're on their best behavior when they are at the doctor. So you've got to actually fill the doctor in on all the missing pieces of the puzzle. And I would encourage my listening audience out there, if you're dealing with anyone with these kinds of symptoms, get it diagnosed, because that's the first stage of the, and we're going to talk about this later, that's the first stage of the grief process is denial. It's like, this isn't happening. She doesn't have anything I should be concerned about. So that's where we're at here. And I'm glad that you learned something today, that this really didn't come on so quickly, because the way you were speaking, it's like, my wife was normal. And then all of a sudden I went to Catalina and she kept asking me, where am I, when she knew I was here. And it's like, it's not that fast. It happens over a long period of time. So there were other probably symptoms that you would interpret as dementia that were actually the onset of this disease. Well, we're going to take a break right now and hold that thought, and we'll talk about that when we get back from our break. And we will be right back, so don't go away.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships. Available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Hear what Lynn Barrington, best-selling author of Daddies and Daughters, published by Simon & Schuster, has to say about it. You think you have it bad? Read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you will be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy Award winner, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch? This book will be an encouragement to anyone who reads it. Charlene just won't let the promises of God go. She's hanging on to her positive, godly attitude, and I look forward to the day when she will receive all that she's believing that God will do for her. In the meantime, she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. Her smile has gotten just as big as it was before her stroke. She's not just a survivor, She's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. I'm glad to know her and her testimony. Read this book. You'll be encouraged regardless of what you're going through. So get your copy of One Arm, One Leg, and 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. But if you purchased it from the author's website, Dave and Charlene Nassani will personally autograph your own copy. Just go to DaveNass.com. That's Dave, and then N like Nancy, A like Apple, S like Sam, S like Sam.com. DaveNass.com. Oh, and while you're on his website, don't forget to leave your name and email address so that Dave can send you his free report, 10 Mistakes All Caregivers Make That You Shouldn't, just for visiting the site. There are a lot of resources, videos, and links to his radio podcast. Again, DaveNass.com. That's N-A-S-S. Now let's rejoin Dave Nassani and his guest on Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Program on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.
And we are back, and we're talking to Richard Barrier, a bereaved husband to his wife who died of dementia, Martha. And I'm sorry, she died of cancer, and she was also battling dementia. I think that's like a double whammy. I interrupted you during the beginning of the break, Richard. What were you going to say?
Well, you know, we were talking about what were the early signs. Because it felt like to me at first there was a tipping point, and that's when I realized that I had a problem that I needed to solve. But in thinking back at the time also, I knew it was probably dementia or Alzheimer's because her father died at the age of 88 because of Alzheimer's. I just didn't want to admit it to myself.
Yeah.
But maybe on a very low level I did.
Yeah, there was this fear in your head. I'm sure you thought about it at least on a subconscious level. And maybe occasionally on a conscious level, but that's denial. We don't want to believe that. That can't be happening. So I want to go on with this. How bad was Martha's dementia in the beginning, and how far did it develop before she was actually diagnosed with cancer? What kind of a time frame, timeline are we looking at?
We're talking about a timeline before she had cancer of 7 years that I was a caregiver. The blessing that I had is that she had no desire to wander, which a lot of dementia or Alzheimer's patients want to wander. That's one reason why we moved from an upstairs apartment to a downstairs apartment, because if she ever started to wander, I didn't want her to go down a flight of stairs.
Yeah, that was smart.
yeah, thank you. Well, and we moved to downstairs, a very nice place. In fact, several times, well, what's funny is she had been in that apartment for like 35 years, and we should move downstairs. We have like a little waterfall, a little pond, and our apartment complex is very lushly landscaped. So you always hear that water running in the background. And I strategically placed her side of the couch so she could look outside and see the water and hear the water. And it was such a blessing because at one point she goes, "I really like living here." And I'm going like, "Thank you, God." Because that was my big concern, because especially with, say, Alzheimer's patients, is that they like continuity. They like everything to be the same, because then they're not put in a position where they don't know what's going on. So they like to be in a rut.
Yeah.
Because that's safe. But she really liked where we lived. I mean, sort of the good news, bad news is that when she passed in her sleep in her own bed, and I was there with her holding her hand when she just literally took her last breath, and that was it. But that was a blessing I've been praying for. It's like, please, Lord, just let her go in her sleep so it's peaceful. And that's exactly what she and I got.
And this was less than a month ago.
Yes. And she'd been fighting breast cancer for a whole year. And you're right. What happened is I was giving her bath. You know, obviously she's naked. And then I noticed her right breast was slightly deformed. I got her to the doctor immediately, to say the least, and the tumor itself was 8 centimeters by 7 centimeters.
How big is that? Is that a golf ball, a tennis ball?
You know, I've never really figured out. 5 centimeters. this is the programming coming out. For every 2.5 centimeters, it's equal to an inch. So it's roughly 3 inches by 2 inches, if I was to more or less guess.
Yeah, that's a tennis ball.
Yeah, it's more like a tennis ball. Exactly.
That's huge.
I never really thought about that. I got her when we went to the doctor. they immediately, you know, took a measuring and looked at her. She's just sort of sitting there. I mean, I'm doing all the talking and understanding what's going on. They started talking, well, she's, because of her age and her dementia, she probably, the chemo and the radiation would be extremely hard on her. And hard being like, I mean, she could die just from the treatment. Because as we know, chemo doesn't differentiate which cancer. It just kills everything in the area.
Sure.
It was very interesting. So I had the sit-down talk with Martha, explained to her what was going on and what was going on in that, and that this might involve or probably would involve a mastectomy, and explained what that was. And I can't say what she said on the radio, but it was a definite no,
wow.
That she would rather pass than or take her chances than to have a mastectomy. And so, you know, somebody with dementia, if they put their foot down, they're really serious. There's no confusion on anybody's part. And when she was first diagnosed with cancer, you asked me, you know, leading up to it, as I've had a lot of life events going on besides, you know, Martha's dementia. I had, you know, loss of a job, loss of a parent. I was going through probate, and literally, you know, everything is sort of ending. In October, we got through probate. I distributed all the checks of the inheritance, and not more than 2 weeks later, she was diagnosed with cancer. And I literally said, Lord, what else is going to go on? So I would say that was part of the anger, but I didn't realize it at the time. I'm not an angry person, but it's like, what the hell? What else is going to happen?
You're not an angry elf, huh?
No, I'm not an angry elf. Don't ever make me angry, though. It's like that thing about still waters running deep and things like that. But so it's like, okay, I sort of put the my analyst hat on. I said, okay, here's another problem to solve. And up to that point, just before the cancer, she was starting to say, I don't know. You know, I asked her a question, do you want to do this or do that? She goes, I don't know, or I guess. So it's like, you know, the dementia had really started to kick in after 7 years.
Right.
And
so you were her caregiver for dementia for 7 years. That's a long time. What did you ever experience any burnout during those 7 years for the dementia?
You know, I think I did in the beginning, only because I didn't know what was going on. She would like refuse to eat or something like that after I'd fixed her a meal, because she was eating less and less and less, and so I had to be sure I got one good meal in her. And
yeah.
I'm a right-handed person. So I was in the kitchen when she was, now I'm going to go to bed. I got very angry. And I literally put two really good dents in the wall behind the sink with my left hand. And then I think one thing that really helped me out a lot, Dave, is that I realized, you know, I'm dealing with somebody who has dementia. I don't have to be right. I am now, you know, you say, oh, you know, not, oh, poor, you know, poor me, whatever.
Yeah.
But then I realized, you know what? There's people out there who have situations way worse than this.
That's right.
And what I've become now is a single parent of a small child.
That's right.
That's how I rationalized it so I wouldn't get angry.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. You know, I did a lot of research on dementia when my mother came down with it. And there was a great book that I found, and I wasn't going to say this, so I can't remember the book at this moment, but maybe I'll put it on my website. But it talks about, I think it's called Moments or something like that. It has moments in the word. If you Google moments and dementia or Alzheimer's, you might come up with it. But it's an interesting concept, something that I never thought about before, and I'm sure you never did either. But according to this author who wrote this, that dementia is an interesting thing. The mind grows younger and younger and younger, or rather, the memory of the most recent memory starts to deteriorate. So all that's left are more and more of the older and older memories, which means the memories of when this person was younger and younger. For example, when a husband is talking to his wife, she may look at him and say, who are you? What are you doing in my apartment? But if that same husband is behind a door and he's talking to her, she will recognize his voice and speak very lovingly to him, because in her mind, she doesn't remember who this old man is. She remembers this young, good-looking guy who had hair and isn't overweight, who swept her off her feet. And the memories of him growing older are gone, you know? So it's not that she doesn't know him. It's that she doesn't recognize him anymore. And that's why she can recognize the voice, because our voices don't really change much over the years. And then once you open the door, it's like, well, who are you? You're impersonating my husband, you know? So she goes on and she says that it's important to have moments with these people. They're never going to get better. They're going to continue to get worse. And the best that they can ever hope for is to share a moment with them. And what is a moment? A moment might be 10 minutes where you and her catch eye contact and you share a memory. And for a brief moment, she remembers and you have a laugh over it. And then it's gone. So you guys just had a moment, you know, and now it's gone. But that's what I started doing with my mother once I read this book, is to just spend maybe hours with her on a visit. And we might have a 10-minute moment, a 60-second moment, and a 2-minute moment. And that's it on that 5-hour visit. But you know what? They remember those moments. That moment that you had with them might keep them smiling all day long. So I would encourage anyone out there who's a caregiver dealing with dementia, try that. It really, really works. Try to come up with memories. Hey, remember when you and I were kids, we used to put covers over our beds and make a tent and this and that? You'd be surprised how quick they remember things like that. The older the memory is, the more likely it's still intact. I wanted to ask you, when Martha was first diagnosed with cancer, did you have to go through a whole new grief process? And was her awareness well enough to realize the implications of the diagnosis? And did she perhaps have her own grief process as well? Comment on that. Yeah, I know it's a loaded question.
Yeah, that's a long question. I would say, and maybe this is just a lie I tell myself, that I didn't really go through a grief process. It's just because I've been dealing with so much before that had been done, it was just one more thing for me to take care of.
You never left the grief process.
Yeah, well, that could be very true. But I would tell you that what I did look for is my goal was, my purpose, my why, was to make her happy. And I put her before me, which is, of course, what all caregivers do. I was no longer at the top of the list. And so I'm not a big sports fan, but Martha loves sports. Mm-hmm. And so I would look for, you know, the Lakers, the Kings, the Angels, especially the Lakers. And even if it was like, you know, the Laker game from like 1985, I put it on and she would love watching this. In fact, what was funny about the Angel games, yeah, she would just love it. And what was funny about, like, if you watch an Angel game on TV, like it's like starts at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon, they'll have like the shortened replay like at 8 o'clock. So she would watch the first full game, thoroughly enjoy it. They'd have a break, you know, where all the commentators talk, and then they'd show the replay. Well, she'd watch the replay, not remember that she watched it in the first place, and would thoroughly enjoy watching it again, like it was, and it was all brand new to her.
That's funny. It reminded me of that story that our friend Craig Duswalt, he shared some funny YouTube videos at his seminar. And one guy was saying, why do they put a Starbucks right across the street from another Starbucks? Who's the demographic for that? I know, Alzheimer's patients. They see a Starbucks, they go in, they have their coffee, they come out, they look across the street, and they say, oh, look, a Starbucks.
I'll go in there. But, you know, while you know, for obvious reasons, my situation was not easy, it was rewarding. Because it did give me a lot of pleasure to take care of Martha. And because what's funny, what I haven't shared is we were together for 30 years. We only got married like 3.5 years ago. And
really?
Reason, I mean, well.
Why so late in life? I mean, why now, you know?
Well, it was her first two husbands that really messed it up for me. I'll blame them. But why we got married, I mean, she was still, she really didn't talk that much, so people just thought that was normal. And so we we got married because I love her, but the other thing was we had commingled our funds. There were legal issues. She had a seizure several years ago, and when I got her to emergency, even though we had been together for like 20 years, I couldn't sign for her.
Yeah.
And so we got married and got that all taken care of. So if there was, you know, when there was going to be other medical issues, I could sign for her.
Sure. And then survivorship issues, you know, sharing Social Security of a spouse that has died, stuff like that, very, very important as well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I made sure of after we got married, and actually within just the last year, so close, was I got power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And because if you're married, that really doesn't, to the government, that really doesn't mean a whole lot. But especially for dementia patients. So I got married, power of attorney, and I went out, and she had like some sort of like 3-page handwritten will. So I have a lawyer I use for my personal use and for my business. And so I spoke to him, and we got it went from a three-page handwritten will to a 28-page typed will. And
wow.
We got all that done just a few months ago.
Now, did she know that you married her?
Sometimes.
Is there awareness there? I mean, the ceremony. I mean, on the day that you proposed to her, I assume you proposed to her, and you went before the judge. I mean, you know, she didn't like wear a wedding gown or anything like that, did she?
No, I just dressed up in my suit, and we just had something done at the Civic Center. With the judge, and we just dressed her up in a really nice outfit that she liked, and just went in and had it done.
Did she know that it was her wedding day?
I'd like to think so. there were times where she it was real funny. She goes, I go, Martha, you know we got married. She goes, yeah, I know. Because I told her, I said, Martha, how do you think I'm going to change? If I was a jerk before, I'm still going to be a jerk. but there was, you know, as up until a couple of years ago, she didn't remember that we got married. It was basically, it was like we were living together like we were before, you know, because it was an older memory. And I would say to the audience, don't take anything personal, because it's not.
Yep.
You know, it just is. And I think one thing that helped me is a couple of years ago through a couple of my friends of mine who are NLP practitioners, Michael Stevenson and Jay Williams, I learned NLP and influence and embedded commands. Because what would happen is sometimes she would wait too long while watching TV to go to the bathroom, and then there would be something for me to clean up.
Right.
So through certain ways I would phrase statements, or, you know, they were like embedded commands, she would go, before she'd argue with me. So I'd say, you know, the commercial would come on between innings or something. And I would say, like, now, Martha, would be a great time to go to the bathroom because a commercial is on now. And she'd go, okay. And then she'd just go get up and go to the bathroom. Because I'm using certain phrases of influence and embedded commands, and she would become complacent. It wasn't like I was arguing with a little kid anymore.
You know,
and there again, I surrounded myself with a lot of good friends.
Dementia patients can be so funny sometimes, and you know, I've laughed a lot at my mother at some of the things that comes out of her mouth because you just don't expect it. And the reason why they're so funny is because kids are funny. You know, remember that old Art Linkletter show? Kids say the darndest things. Well, these dementia patients, they're kind of kids again, you know, getting younger, and so they say the darndest things sometimes. Well, Richard, as you know, our audience is made up mainly of caregivers and those who are grieving loss, and many of them cancer, dementia, you name it, you know, autism. How long did it take you to go through your own grief process, the denial, the anger, the bargaining, depression? I know you didn't think of this. I think we already spoke about the denial. We covered that. We spoke a little about the anger. How about bargaining? I mean, when things like this happen, there's only really one person to bargain with, and that's kind of God, you know, like the foxhole Christian. Lord, if you get me out of this, I'll go to church every day, and I'll, you know, do this, and I'll do that. And, you know, unless it's a love affair where you can kind of bargain with the other person and say, well, can we at least be friends, you know? And then there's the depression and the acceptance. So why don't you touch on those that you didn't touch on yet?
Yeah, I think part of this, I think the big thing that helped me, especially because of the cancer, or since the cancer was diagnosed, is that I think emotionally, mentally, and somewhat on a subconscious level, I had been preparing myself for this for a while. So I knew it was coming. And as
far
as bargaining goes,
you're never really ready, are you? That's what I've been told.
No, you're not. And it's like, Allison, especially following up to the day that she died, it's like, wow. Because I thought she could live to be 88, just like her dad. And I would tell you, she died when she was, 73. And so there were times when she was first diagnosed with cancer, I'm going like, God, if she lives to be, I was hitting that wall of literally, if she lives to be 80, I don't think I could handle that. And
just one day at a time.
That's all you really can do. And but it's like, it was really hitting me because toward the end, I was changing the bed sheets every night, every day. I have to get the carpets cleaned. But it's like, my brain was fried. I mean, I was hitting, I didn't know it was called burnout, but as soon as we had spoken a little bit, I said, yeah, that's what I was heading toward.
Well, you mentioned before, I'm sorry for interrupting, that you put her needs above you put her needs above yours. And I wanted to interject and say, yes, but you're not supposed to.
Well, I'm gonna add this to the mix, Dave, is that I truly believe in the marriage vows for richer, yes, poor, sickness or in health. And in the past, she had helped me, and it was just my turn now.
Yep. Yes, and I'm certainly not suggesting that you love her any less than you did all of your life, because a lot of people put the other person before the others. You know, marriage works. It's not a 50-50 deal, if those of you who don't know that. It's a 100-100 deal. So, because if it's a 50-50, you're headed for divorce, because one day you're going to feel like, hey, I'm putting in 51%. She's only putting in 49%. This ain't fair, you know. But if you're putting in 100 and she's putting in 100, then it will always be fair because you're doing your best. She's doing her best.
Yep.
But as a caregiver, and I don't care if it's your spouse or your mother or anyone, if you don't put your own mask on first, like I said at the beginning of the show, you're going to burn out. You're going to become fried, you know, and you're going to need a caregiver. And somebody else, they're going to have to find somebody else for your wife or your kid or your daughter or whoever, because now we need two caregivers. You know what I mean? So that's all I'm saying.
Well, and I'm going to throw this. I'm going to, in total transparency here. One thing I've just recently started to talk about is when Martha and I, just before Martha and I first met, and this is like back in 1984.
Yeah.
I'll share this. I was doing a lot of drugs.
Oh, wait, before you share that, we're up on a break. Save that for after the break. So we will be right back.
Tune in to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver program, every Saturday at 3:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, only on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. The whole purpose of this show is to help support you in your caregiving responsibilities so that you take care of yourself first, so that you don't burn out, because your loved ones are counting on you to take care of them. And Dave Nassani should know. He's been a caregiver to his wife for over 19 years after she suffered a debilitating stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on her right side. After a 2-year grieving period, she came to the realization that she had to play the cards that she was dealt. And so she decided to reinvent herself and attempt to do all the things that she was famous for doing before her stroke, like gourmet cooking, hosting dinner parties for 12, interior decorating, sewing, and too many other hobbies and activities to mention here. She now basically makes us normal people look like whiners and complainers by continuing to do almost everything she did before her stroke. But in essence, she does it with one arm and one leg tied behind her back, and she might as well have duct tape over her mouth too, since she can't speak. And she does it all with her amazing positive attitude and smile. So what's your excuse for not playing the cards that you were dealt and turning those lemons into lemonade? Dave has been so inspired by Charlene's attitude that it inspired him to reach out to caregivers by writing 3 books and starting this radio program to make sure that caregivers have a place to go to get the support that they need in order to avoid burnout and to get through the grief process. Now get ready to learn how you can avoid burnout and survive grief. It's Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. And here again is your host, Dave Nassar.
And we are back with Richard. Okay, I interrupted you during the break. Richard, what were we going to talk about?
Well, what I was going to talk about is back in the mid-80s, before I met Martha, I was doing a lot of drugs. I was doing a lot of pot and cocaine and a few other things here or there. And mm-hmm. when I met Martha, she basically said, I don't do drugs and never will. And pretty much if you want to be with me, neither will you. And it's like, okay, if I want to be with this woman, I have to quit. And so in a lot, and I did. I did some backsliding here or there, but for the most part, I've been clean for the last 30 years of drugs. And in a lot of ways, she saved my life because of that. Because not only because of the drugs, but the people I was associating with were not the best people in the world, let's just say.
This sounds like a line out of the movie with Jack Nicholson, As Good As It Gets. He said about Helen Hunt, "You make me want to be a better person."
Very true. I haven't seen that movie in a while. But and Martha loved Jack Nicholson, by the way, also.
Who doesn't?
Yeah. But
So she made you a better person. That's good.
She really did. She really did. Oh, really. I wouldn't say I was a selfish person, but I was definitely focused on what I could get.
Okay. That's fair.
So, yeah.
So I want to know how Richard is doing today and what things, business endeavors or whatever, are you involved with to take your mind off of missing Martha? Because it hasn't been that long.
No. And, one of the things, I have my business where I need to start marketing. I'm an idea guy. I'm a creative person. I make things. But now I have to start the sales and marketing process for my phone app, Text Me Later, like you were talking about before, because it does save lives and it has a lot of value. I want to be sure people get to go to the holidays and that there's no empty chairs or empty placements at the dinner table. So I'm literally this week starting to focus on that. What I'm going to get back into doing is it's sort of tough to justify having fun when you have to take care of somebody. I used to do pottery back in 1999, up until just a few years ago, because I have my own semi-private studio that I really actually haven't used in over 2 years because I was home all the time. Hmm. But so I'm going to start doing – they have night classes. There's a big ceramic art center in Santa Ana called Muddy's Studio. And so I have my own semi-private 10-by-13-foot spot with my wheel and all my equipment and stuff like that. And they're open at night, so I'm going to start going to them like Monday through Thursday, 6:30 to 9:30, something like that, just so I'm not sitting at home all by myself, because I know me, old habits will creep in and I will just sit here start pounding beers and
or drugs, who knows.
No, I can't afford the drugs. I don't know anybody I could get them from anymore unless I moved to Colorado or Washington. But
well, that sounds
so
like
I'm going to get back to
that's a good hobby. It's actually more than a hobby, isn't it?
I take it actually more serious than a hobby, because I've won awards. Sold my work in galleries.
That's wow.
Yeah, and not for the last couple of years, but 7 years ago, I started to do demos at the OC Fair in the Crafters Village on Throwing on the Wheel, and I also sold my work there as well.
Yes, you definitely have crossed the line that takes you out of hobbies.
Yes. And, I have some thoughts in my head about designs I want to do that I get to play with now.
Sure.
And what's funny is I reconnected with my old ceramics teacher from Santa Ana College, where he had organized a trip to go to Peru in 2003. This is a few years before. Oh, it was a blast. What's funny is, you know, this is before the dementia kicked in, of course. And 4 days before leaving, I got laid off from my job, totally blindsided. And so to say the least, I went anyway. And so I reconnected with him because, the worst job I could have ever had. I will not mention the name. It's a very large corporation in Costa Mesa. But in any case, so I reconnected with
Hold on, let me Google that.
Yeah, really. Oh, you would know who they are, definitely. But I reconnected with my old teacher because I saw that he was planning a trip to go to the Yucatan. And so this is great. I love ancient cultures. Oh, yeah. Go to Cancun, that whole area. And so I finally got in touch with him. And he goes, Richard, you're the only person that was interested in going, so I canceled it. And it's like, oh. He goes, however, he's planning on a trip to go to Japan for 2 weeks in late April, and I've already told him I'm going. Because there again, if I just sit at home, I will go crazy.
Richard, the bucket list is out. It is time to begin.
It actually is, because part of me says, well, this sounds selfish, but it's not. This is self-preservation, you're right. I get to get the bucket list out and pick something.
You know, look at your life. You've been a caregiver for how many years? You have had it rough. And you know, I often fantasize about if and when my wife ever dies, you know, what will I do? You know, I'll kind of wander around the streets in a daze, you know, not knowing what to do or where to go because, you know, I've been a caregiver for so long. It's like, oh, my gosh, you know.
Yeah.
And so I can't even think about it because if and when that day ever comes, I know God will give me the wisdom to do such and such. But a part of me envies you. You are about to have the time of your life. Just go ahead and do not let guilt stop you or slow you down.
Thank you. No, the other thing, too, is, you know, Martha is so funny. She's people would call her a hippie chick because she's the original owner of a 1970 beige Volkswagen Bug. And
I
it runs like a top. It runs really, really. She loved that car, too. The car's name was Violet. She named her car.
Yes,
so that should tell you something
about
Martha. Of course she did.
Of course she did, yes.
But my cars, I have a 1993 Honda Civic. And things are starting to have gone wrong with it lately, where the cost of fixing it is equal to the cost of its value. And so as soon as they come out, I'm very seriously considering buying. In fact, I am going to buy one, a 2015 Ruby Red Mustang GT. I've got the money. I have the resources. I've got the money. So it's like, you know, I haven't had a car in over 20 years.
Do it.
I'm thinking, you know, this way I could go on those trips that are on the bucket list.
You have the caregiver's permission. Do it.
Thank you. I will take full advantage of my situation because you're right. You know, it's bittersweet, but I have no ties to nothing and no one anymore. I can, like, pull out that bucket list and do anything I want.
You are a free man.
I am. And also, by the way, I am in absolutely no hurry to date anybody at all, not even interested, because for a lot of reasons. But I'm not on the market.
Hey, if it happens, it happens. It will happen when you least expect it. If it happens, just
exactly,
have fun.
and that's how I met Martha. I went to the jacuzzi to have a beer to relax after work, and here's this woman that I wound up spending the rest of my life with.
See, you or I are in the same mastermind group, Craig Duswalt's Rockstar Mastermind. And that's an excellent place to have fun and meet people. So you're in the right place, and this is the right time. So just go for it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's like, you're right. I need to go reprint off my bucket list because I haven't looked at it for a while because I do have one. But, you know, when you're a caregiver, it's like, well, that's a nice list because that's about all you can do with it, you know?
Yeah. So, now that, tell us about your acceptance of all of this. I mean, are you there yet? Obviously, it sounds like you are. How are you coping with your new normal? You know, your business, you probably have to, you know, get a website and promote it now and put I'm talking about your pottery as well. You know, get a website and put all of your stuff on the website so that people can see all this art that you've been creating. I mean, you've got a lot of work to do out of yourself. So save. You can't have all fun. You got to get to work too. You know.
Yeah, I definitely have to get to work, because or else the money will run dry after a while. But as far as, you know, I'll be honest with you, Dave, as far as acceptance, when Martha, you know, especially once she had the cancer and the dementia, I mean, if she didn't have the dementia, we have a whole different discussion of treatment. But, you know, because of the dementia and also because of the cancer, again, I think I had emotionally, on some levels, emotionally, intellectually, I've been in a form of acceptance or inevitability, I'll say, for like the last year. I mean, this could have gone on for another year. Who knows? The dementia was never going to go away, even if the cancer was shrinking, so there was lots of hope there. But once it came back with a vengeance, and she went very, very fast, which is a blessing for her and for me. So it wasn't all dragged out. I mean,
or drugged out.
But I definitely have a new normal. I mean, I did my big cry when the ambulance people, it's a different word, but to get the point, when they basically wheeled her out, you know, she was all covered and everything, to take her to the funeral home, if you will. But so, you know, I even got a little teary yesterday, but every day I feel better and better. But you know, things come up, like, you know, I'll find one of her long hairs on the pillow or on the couch or something like that. And you just, I mean, there's so much around here. There's so many anchors, if you will, of little memories coming up of her. It's all over this place. I'm not planning on doing anything major, which would be my advice to everybody out there. Don't make a radical change for at least 6 months. And other people told me a year once your loved one passes, because you're not operating at 100%.
You're not cleaning out her closet. You're not taking her things and giving them to the Goodwill. You're not doing any of that.
Actually, I've just started to do that. I belong to the Orange Chamber of Commerce. That's where my business is located. And so they have the Assistance League of Orange. And so I'm donating the majority of all of her clothes and shoes that kind of thing to them. Because it doesn't make sense for me to – there's a couple of things I'm going to hold on to, you know, like the dress that she was married in and a couple other things. But for the most part, it's a new beginning for me, and there's no reason to have those kind of things here where somebody else can actually use them. And the other thing I would tell the audience as well, so through the funeral home, I donated her body to science. She was going to be cremated. Because she had Alzheimer's or dementia and breast cancer, and you know, where the cancer had metastasized. So if anything good can come out of this for research or more knowledge or whatever, I did that.
Cool.
And then about a couple of weeks later, I got her ashes back, and then I'll figure out what I'll do with those later on. She wanted to be cremated. She wanted to be, as she would say, she wants to be longitude and latitude off of Catalina, and so. She was such a great woman, Dave, let me tell you. But
sounds like it.
Yeah, she was a kick.
And you're going to see her again, you know.
Exactly.
Not the end.
Exactly. She's here with me, you know, whether that be, you know, ethereally, but certainly in my mind, in my memory, she's always here. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is I forgot what I was going to say the other thing was. go ahead. Did you have to break?
No, finish. No.
Okay. I was going to say is I'm not going to have a funeral for Martha. I'm going to have what in the South they call a wake, but I'm going to have a party because, you know, she had a great life. So we need to have a celebration of her life. Yes. And when I'm ready, that's what I will do.
Yeah, I love that plan. You know, Richard, few people take their vows as seriously as you did. When I and my wife joined a stroke support group, I was shocked at how many spouses had left those that had a stroke. It's like, you know, divorce papers while they were still in the hospital. He says, I didn't sign up for this. You know, I'm not going to be a caregiver. And boom, they're gone.
Wow.
And it's just shocking, you know, because we take our vows and very few people really understand and are prepared to follow them till death do us part, through sickness and health, through richer and poor. You know how many divorces happen because people lose their finances, because they lose their life savings? So congratulations. Kudos to you.
Thank
and
you.
I'm glad that I can refer to people like you and say, you know, not everyone is divorcing their spouse who just had a stroke or just came down with dementia or just was diagnosed with cancer.
Yeah.
And it isn't an easy road, obviously not. But you know what?
Huh.
It's the right thing to do, and you will get your reward. Crowns are being laid up for you in heaven, my friend. That's what
the
Bible says.
Thank you. It's certainly... is an you know, I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but it certainly is an indicator of your own character.
Well, thank you. Now, in the last few minutes of the show, what pearls of wisdom can you leave our caregivers and the grievers that they can immediately implement right now and feel some comfort?
Well, I think I've been seeding little pearls throughout all of this, but...
little reminder.
Yeah, little reminders. You know, one thing I'll make a quick point about is, especially if you have pets, remember that your pets grieve too.
Yeah.
And we've got three cats, and this one old cat would sit with Martha all day, every day, on her lap while she's trying to watch TV. And so I've been watching her, and she you can tell the animals go through a little bit of grief. And so just, you know, watch the pets. Be sure you hug them and pet them more, because they're going through their own little grieving process too. And one thing this is really, really... I didn't either until I came home and one of the cats is like meowing at me. And you know she's going like, where's mom? And and there again, this is a total lesson of like truly, this sounds so cliche-ish. But now that I've gone through this, it's a truism. Is like... live life to the fullest, because you never know what's going to happen. I mean, it could be a stroke. Mm-hmm. It could be cancer. It could be, you know, just hit by a car. Now you're crippled. I mean, it could be anything. And so just truly live life to the fullest. And another thing for a caregiver is what I realized is I needed to drive slower, because I could not take that risk. Is if it wasn't for me being around, I mean, we have money, but Martha thought we were broke. You just have to laugh about that.
Yeah.
But if I'm not in the picture anymore, there were no relatives, there were no children. So if I get hurt, if I'm not around anymore, Martha becomes homeless. So I had to be sure. It's like, okay, you need to dial it back, Richard. And don't weave in and out of traffic. Slow down when you're driving. Don't do risky behaviors.
Yeah, don't text and drive.
Exactly. Well, I don't anyway, because I made the app. That's really bad press. But... that would be my advice, and hug him. I told Martha every day, I love you. And it was such a blessing. One time, I'm getting a little choked up now. It was such a blessing. We were talking, and she goes, you take really good care of me. And she said, she told me, thank you. Thank you for taking good care of me. And it's like, wow, where did that come from? But that was a blessing for me.
That's like when your little 3-year-old just for no reason looks up and says, Daddy, I love you.
Yeah, exactly.
Unsolicited. Well, Richard, thank you. Thank you again for allowing me to interview you, making you talk about your very painful subject, the love of your life. And thank you to my listening audience for tuning in every Wednesday at noon Pacific Standard Time. And don't forget that all our shows are recorded podcasts that you can listen to on our website, davenass.com, and iTunes. And by the way, we do rebroadcast this on Saturdays at 3:30. And when you are on my site, don't forget to take the Are You a Candidate for Burnout quiz so that you can get your free ebook, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. So until next week, may God richly bless you. Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern, To catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process, right here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.